Hey gang, welcome to the show. Welcome to the new week. Today is Monday, May 21st, and Monday means we have Mark Collette on National Bugle Radio here on RBN. Mark Collette, welcome to the show.
Hello, Patrick. It is great to be here. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. I am not eating kosher food today, thanks to my Kosher-tified app. It's a good thing not to eat. I'll just remind people that go to Kosher-tified. You can go to the kosher-tified.com or look up the kosher question, or go to nationalbugle.com and you'll find the button there. Good thing to do. I'm not eating kosher food today, and I was not eating kosher food over the weekend when your royal wedding happened. What were you doing over the weekend during this royal wedding madness?
Well, throughout the royal wedding, I actually fell to sleep. I had a bit of a nap, and when I woke up, it was all over. Because I was building up my energy levels.
Was it all just a dream?
It was all just a bad, bad dream. Because when I was, I was building up my energy levels for my epic 10K assault course. So I was preparing myself for the Sunday, and I enjoyed myself. I enjoyed myself, other than stumbling into some barbed wire that I had to crawl under and cutting the side of my head open, which left me running the race sort of with blood all over myself. But other than that, it was very good, and I came 17th out of 300.
That's
and we had
bad.
A good number of nationalists attend. So hopefully next time we'll have more people attending, and we will have a greater number. And the people who came this time will come back, and we'll build on that, and we'll help to build a healthy future with lots of fit, young, and able-bodied nationalists.
And fit, middle-aged nationalists if I get over there.
Well, it would be fantastic to have you over here.
It sounds like a lot of fun. And now, on Sunday, I was out and about, and I had a little chat with an older black woman here in America, and to my surprise, maybe I shouldn't have been surprised, but to my surprise, she asked me if I watched the wedding on Saturday, and I was kind of taken aback. I was thinking, why would I? But because there was an American black or a half black there in the wedding. Okay, now I get it. Because, I mean, why would most American blacks couldn't identify England on the map, but that might be the case. I don't know. So why would they care? Oh, an American black there, right, okay. And it got me thinking a little bit about the strength of non-white identitarianism, or even anti-white identitarianism. And this woman, Meghan Markle, being embraced by the white, by the black Americans, the way Obama was. There was a little bit of thinking about Obama for a few months. There was a little bit of discussion, but they embraced him. They accepted him. They're accepting this woman. And it's so strong here. And then, of course, that somebody, Andy Hitchcock was on David Duke's show today, and he was talking about a BBC show, which was all about mixed race people in Britain. And, you know, it seems that they, today at least, they have very strong non-white identities. Even if they have, you know, a white father or a white mother, they'll have very strong non-white identities. And the last thing I'm going to say is I remember as a kid, in the 60s, I had, in my neighborhood, there was one family, and the father was Japanese-American. He had been in World War II. He was a military officer. He was Japanese-American, and he had these three boys, and they ran around, and we all, you know, at first, when we saw them, we thought, oh, they look a little different. I wonder what that's all about. But that was about it, and they didn't have any non-white identity. They just were, they were just kids running around the neighborhood, you know, swinging on the rope swing and just up to all the same mischief that everybody else was. They didn't have any, you know, other than having a funny sounding last name and looking a little bit different. They weren't part of any kind of they identified as white. But nowadays there is, at least in the United States, and I would think in Britain as well, there is a media and educational system effort to get people to identify as non-whites, if at all possible, even to the extent of maybe embracing gayness and becoming gay Americans and therefore being part of this, you know, minority, being a minority that way. What do you think about that, Mark?
I think it's a very interesting point. I think that you have seen a huge number of people seize upon the royal wedding, and they have done it in a very identitarian way. And the two types of people that have done this is, firstly, you have seen blacks or people of colour who have tried to claim this is some great moment because you have someone who is not indigenous to Europe, somebody who isn't of European descent, marrying into a major European royal family. And you also see the left, who are absolutely gleeful because for them, even though they don't like royalty, even though they don't like the monarchy, for them, this is a huge, huge rubber stamping of the multicultural system and a way almost to rub traditionalists and people who love British culture and heritage, many of whom do like the monarchy, to rub their nose in the fact that everything is going to be multiculturalized if the left have their way. But one thing I took from this that's really, really, really quite interesting is that despite making out that this is a celebration of modern Britain, that the whole of Britain was behind this, that essentially the British people loved it and there was record turnouts and the whole world wished them well, you can actually see that most people who would normally be interested in celebrating a royal wedding simply weren't. Less than 18 million people tuned in to watch it on television. Now, the last royal wedding, which was Prince William and Kate Middleton, over 26 million people tuned in to watch. So that's a massive drop. That's 8 million people who didn't watch it this time. Now, where have all those people gone? But it wasn't just the viewership on television that fell dramatically. If you actually look at the number of street parties that were held in sort of commemoration of the royal wedding, you've seen a huge drop in Kent, which received the largest number of street parties last time. Kate and William's wedding had 182 street parties in 2011 for William and Kate's wedding.
And this year, for our listeners, Kent, that's south of London, and that's where Kent
it's around is. London. It's near to London, and basically it's a very leafy, middle class area, upper middle class area. But 182 street parties were held. That means there had to be road closures. They had to put in an application to hold a street party. Now, this year, there was only 14. So 182 to 14, what a drop-off. In Hertfordshire, which was declared the street party capital of the UK, that had 298 street parties for Kate and William's wedding. This year, it had just 51. And this was mirrored all over the country. In the whole of Wales, there was only 17 street parties for Harry and Meghan's wedding, with over 200 being planned for William and Kate's. And this was mirrored all over the country. we've seen a huge drop-off. People have turned their back on this. People were not interested. And I know why they weren't interested. It was a twofold. It wasn't just the racial aspect. But Meghan, she doesn't just not fit because she isn't of European descent. She doesn't fit because she's classless and her family are classless. And they've turned the royal family into a soap opera. You have a scheming father who's running a scam and he's got the paparazzi pretending to follow him and he's cutting a deal with them and they know where he's going and he's making half the money. You've got her brothers and sisters. They're writing open letters to the press and they're trying to sell their stories and they want to have movies made and they want to have a directorial hand in it. You've got a mother who looked a bit like a vagrant, who certainly didn't fit there.
Who came to the royal wedding with her pierced nose. You know, if somebody, sorry to interrupt, but if somebody, say, 50 years ago or 75 years ago wanted a caricature of a black family marrying into the royal royal family, wouldn't they have a black woman sitting there with a pierced nose at the looking like that? She was almost a caricature of what people might have imagined 75 years ago.
Well, exactly. And all this soap opera, will her father walk her down the aisle? Will she say she loves her father? Has her father been selling stories? You know, it was also embarrassing. It was embarrassing that she was a Hallmark Channel actress. It was embarrassing that she'd starred in sex scenes. It was embarrassing that there were topless pictures of her doing the rounds on the internet. And all of this is not befitting of a royal family. But it happened. And it has turned off huge, huge numbers of people who were previously, just 7 years ago, were completely invested in the royal family, who were completely invested in a royal wedding. And now they just don't care. They've given up. And they've given up because this isn't what they bought into. This isn't their idea of a traditional royal wedding. This isn't their idea of a classy nationwide event that you can take national pride in. So they weren't celebrating. And with these street parties, the thing to remember, the fact these didn't happen wasn't just a barometer of a lack of interest, but it was a barometer of a lack of interest of people who were the most invested previously. Because if you were someone who went to the council, put in the application, got the road closure, set it all up, that's a huge amount of effort. That's not just being a fan. That's not just liking the royal family. That's like being a super fan. That's like those guys who, they don't just get tickets for the concert, but they turn up 3 days in advance and camp outside the venue and they're wearing the T-shirt and they're drinking coffee, you know, in the freezing cold, trying to stay warm so they can be the first into the venue, the first to get a glimpse of the band. You know, that's the sort of level these people are on of fandom. And those people, the super fans, the people who organized events that rallied communities for a royal event, they've just disassociated. They're not interested anymore, which shows how deep the dissatisfaction with the royal wedding goes. And it shows just how there is this huge disconnect between what the media is saying, like, wow, this multicultural, multiracial, very modern wedding that everyone loved, but people didn't love it. And the media can say this as much as they want, but the facts are that the people who like tradition and culture were turned off by this very embarrassing and farcical wedding.
So the meme in the media was that this wedding brings the royal family into the 21st century. And, you know, sometimes the racial aspect was explicit and sometimes it wasn't. So I have some questions. I mean, you've kind of addressed the issue that a lot of traditionalists, the very people who would have been interested in a royal wedding, were rather turned off by this. So my one question is, Okay, so I'm going to ask both questions at the same time. So one is, has there been any leaks from the royal family or from the palace that within the royal family that there was any resistance to this, any thought that this might be very bad for the institution? That's one question. And then the other question is this an effort to sell the monarchy to Britain's increasingly, you know, increasingly non-white population? Those are the two questions.
Well, firstly, very few things leak in royal circles, and that's because they are very tightly protected. And they're not just tightly protected by teams of very well-paid people who are very loyal to them, but they're also tightly protected by the security services. So it is very, very rare that anything ever leaks from inside royal circles. But it didn't have to leak. That's the important thing to remember. There didn't have to be any leaks. You could see it all over their faces. They didn't look happy. They didn't look comfortable. People were giggling and smirking, and the whole ceremony didn't befit royalty. And it was written all over the Queen's face. It was written all over Prince Philip's face. You could even see at some points Harry looked slightly embarrassed, and he was the guy getting married. And I just felt that ultimately, when you see something like that, when you see people at a wedding looking embarrassed, cringing, sort of pulling very stern faces, you felt there was an air of ultimately embarrassment, really. Embarrassment, like they wanted to disassociate. They can't. They can't say to Harry, well, you know, you're not going to marry her. He can marry whoever he wants. And in this day and age, if they said you can't marry her, there would be a huge blow up over whether it was racial, you know, were they being elitist? We'd have never heard the end of it. So they just had to grin and bear it. And grin and bear it they did, but it was written all over their faces. And I think that Harry will be a little bit like the black sheep of the family. I don't think he will be allowed into any of their more sort of inner circle style events. I don't think he will get the number of public engagements his brother does. And I think that after this, the royal family will most likely ensure that he never gets anywhere near the throne.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Now, the line of succession is... who's the other guy? Andrew? Is that your... No.
Charles is the next in line, and after that, William is the next in line. And something else I've got to say as well, just sorry to put in something else I remember.
We only have about 20 seconds before the break.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I want to hear that after the break, but then also just the line of succession after... Okay, so Charles is next, and then William, and then would it be William's sons before going to Andrew or Harry or anybody else?
I think by the time... Oh.
Okay, well, we will be back with those answers after the break.
There's an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality. There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus for a one-time donation to RBN of only $500? It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsight.com to make it happen. May 5th is the last day you will hear this offer on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell 5.
Welcome back to the show. Welcome back to National Bugle Radio on RBN, the Royal Wedding Edition. And Mark, you were just about to tell us something. You had an insight for us.
Well, the other thing that's very, very notable about the Royal Wedding is when it was William and Kate's wedding, people got a bank holiday. It was a weekday, and everyone got a holiday for it. The Queen made it a public holiday. She didn't make Harry's wedding a public holiday. And I think there really has been little signs like that that were, which you can see and you can read into, and you can read into these signs. And it's the royals' way of saying that they are not giving it the same rubber stamp of approval that they gave William's. And I would be very, very worried if I was Harry. Well, he won't be worried. He'll think it's perfect. He'll think he's fantastic. He'll be super happy at the moment. But I don't think he's going to be that happy for long. And if I was the royal family, I would be very, very worried about a messy divorce.
Mm. Now, William and Kate's wedding was kind of, would have been off of my radar screens, but I knew people who were interested. I remember Charles and Diana. I actually watched their wedding, which I guess was that 1981 or 1980? I think it was 81. I watched that. Kind of, it was a spectacle, and it was interesting. One point that's been raised here by someone is that Meghan is actually older now than Diana was when she died. She's rather old to be a princess. So here's the question. There are people in the United States and elsewhere who look at the Queen Elizabeth and the British royal family, but Queen Elizabeth in particular, as being part of this this hidden government, this hidden ruling class that rules over us. You think of, in particular, Lyndon LaRouche, and others. And there may be people who listen to the show who think that the Queen Elizabeth is a very powerful person. I've always been of the opinion that that's a distraction, that they're probably not any more powerful than other rich and famous people who are rich and famous and have some influence, but are they more powerful than the Kardashians or the Trumps were before the election? But there are those who think that. And then again, are they? I'd like, as somebody who's politically astute and from Britain, are they just figurehead constitutional monarchs, or do they actually pull a lot of weight?
They're really just constitutional monarchs. They don't really have any actual power, but they are nonetheless important figureheads, especially to many traditionalists. And because of that, this has been something which I would say was rather important in many ways, because as figureheads, as people that many people would take as, monarchs that many people take some form of inspiration from, and as people that are undoubtedly tied to our culture and our heritage and our traditions, I think when you see a wedding like this, and if you take out the racial aspect, just the breaks with tradition in terms of the way the ceremony was carried out and the vows, this is really something that, as I said, has turned a lot of people off, but has been done and played up in a way that is clearly intended to be a huge influence on people, because people are influenced by them. Maybe not the same people that are influenced by the Kardashians, not the same people that are influenced by the Trumps, but there are a large group of people, who are huge fans of the royal family, that are influenced greatly by them. I mean, despite the numbers being much reduced in terms of who was watching and who was turning out to celebrate, you still got to say, pushing 18 million people watched the event. Tens of thousands turned out to see it live and, marked the route and waved flags. That's still an impressive turnout. And the thing that I worry about is not their actual constitutional power. It's the fact that by doing what they've done, and by breaking with tradition, and by turning the royal family into this low-grade soap opera, it has again acted in a way that will only pull Western civilization further off track.
Mm-hmm. There's some symbolism there, and maybe it really wouldn't matter if this had happened 100 years ago, when the demographics of the UK and other places were basically stable. It would just be kind of an anomaly, but with all that's going on, even these kinds of symbolic gestures in the midst of all of the material policies and all the material pressures on replacing one population with another, then it becomes very problematic, very dangerous. We will be back after the break with more from Mark Collette.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited. So take a breath, head to aroutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at aroutfitting.com.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party. And the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Welcome back to the show. Welcome back to National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm Patrick Slattery with Mark Collette. Let's move on to some new developments. We have Alex Jones, who there's been a video going around. I haven't seen the full unedited video, but I did see about two minute 20 second excerpts. There's a compilation of excerpts from Alex Jones talking into the camera about Jewish power. And, you know, what I saw was a little bit chopped up, so it's a little bit hard to give an evaluation of just exactly what he said and exactly what he meant. But he was talking about Jewish power probably in a new way that he hasn't before. Because, and up until now, I don't know if he's talked about Queen Elizabeth per se as being part of some big conspiracy, but he talks about big conspiracies, secret governments, globalists, and in a way that has always obfuscated Jewish power. And of course he had a debate that was actually set up by an RBN listener, Frank from North Carolina, set up this debate, called into Alex Jones's show, and on behalf of David Duke, challenged him to debate David Duke. And that actually happened, and David Duke was reciting all of the evidence of Jewish power, and Alex Jones was reduced to kind of joking and name-calling and nothing serious. He had no answer for Dr. Duke. And then over the next few years, he's just continued to talk about globalists and whatever he talks about, because I don't pay too much attention. But today was actually talking about Jewish power. He's talking about the Lenin being Jewish and the Jewish role in the Russian Revolution and Jewish massive overrepresentation in the halls of power. And so is this something that he's going to walk back? Because I think he's also recently talked about why he supports Israel. Is this something he's just going to walk back? Or is this something that's really a sign of the times, a sign that understanding and awareness of Jewish power is getting out there, and for somebody to maintain their credibility with an audience that is becoming increasingly aware of Jewish power, that he's got to maybe follow his audience? What do you think, Mark?
Well, I think it's a very, very complex question. I don't for a minute think that Alex Jones never, ever knew about the disproportionate role that Jews play in anti-Western activity. I don't think he was ever blind to that. I think he knew about it, but I think at one time they kept him in check, or he was kept in check, by large numbers of advertisers and a regular, steady revenue stream from advertisers who may well have been put off if he'd gone down that line. The same is true of that skinny guy who does the shouty videos in front of the map, Paul Joseph Watson. He's a very odd fella.
He's one of your compatriots, isn't he?
I would have loved him to come to my run on Sunday. I would have loved to drag him through the mud and the barbed wire fences and see how he survived, or didn't, as the case may be. But he's someone who used to make videos talking about Jewish influence, and all of a sudden, then he decided that Jewish influence wasn't even a thing, that it was just something that confused him, because he tracks these narratives and just doesn't see any problem with the Jews, as he put it. So I think these people know, but they don't talk about it because they feel if they do talk about it, they may lose some money. They may lose a little bit of their income, and life may become a little bit more difficult for them. Because what these people want to do is raise certain issues and talk about certain things without getting their sort of doors kicked in, or without, you know, making life too difficult for themselves. But I think Alex Jones has got slowly angrier and angrier with what's happening to him and the way he's being
deplatformed. What is happening to him?
Well, he's being deplatformed. Okay. These people aren't playing nice with him anymore. So he's like,
a lot of money.
He has, and he's like, if you're going to take the gloves off with me, I'll take the gloves off with you, and I'll tell my audience who's really behind all this. And I think that's what he's doing now. And I also think there is a degree of truth in what you've just said. There are so many powerful voices talking about Jewish influence. You've got David Duke, you've got yourself, you've got Patrick Little, you've got Paul Neelan, you've got Mike Enoch, you've got the Daily Stormer, you've got the Right Stuff, you've got Fash the Nation, you've got so many shows, you've got so many YouTube channels, you've got so many radio shows, you've got so many websites. And the more these people talk about these issues, and you've got to remember there's a massive, massive overlap between people who are on the very left of our movement who watch and listen to the likes of Stephen Crowder and then people who read the Daily Stormer. There's a huge overlap. The more people like Alex Jones try to not say something about these issues, the more they look disingenuous and the more their own audience starts to distrust them. Because people will go to Alex Jones and they'll do a bit of digging and they'll watch a few things on the internet and they'll watch something by David Duke, like his excellent Inside, you know, Goldman Sachs Inside the Zionomatrix video. And they'll watch that and they'll be like, Well, they'll watch my video on the Jewish role in pornography or the Jewish role in mass immigration.
Or maybe,
and they'll be like,
listen to our debate with Halsey English.
Yeah, listen to our debate with Halsey English and think, well, these guys really nailed that. And then they'll be like, well, if they're nailing it, why isn't Alex Jones talking about this? And over time, less and less people will trust him because he looks evasive. And of course, David Duke completely creamed him in that debate. And what did he do? Well, he tried to have it scrubbed off the internet. He took it down off his site. He didn't reference it anymore. And the reason being, he was being evasive. And I don't think he wants to look evasive anymore. And I think, in a way, by stop advertising with him, by stop funding him, by stopping giving him a revenue stream, they haven't actually destroyed him. They've just cut the strings and set him free. He's no longer a puppet on their strings. He's actually now more dangerous than he was when he was being funded by them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's... Well, that's what's going to happen. I don't know if they know what to do, because things are changing. Now, I want to bring up the case of Jordan Peterson, the Canadian professor, who's, I guess he's at the University of Toronto, but he's spent time at Harvard. He knows what's going on. And he's gaining a very, very high profile. I guess, does he have a million followers on YouTube? He's got hundreds of thousands, I guess. He's prominent enough that he's invited on maybe Tucker Carlson's show. He's certainly been a panelist on other shows. So he's got a high profile. He's in the mainstream media. And a month or two ago, he was asked at one of his events, and I believe he was asked by a Jewish man about, are Jews white, or something about the Jewish question. Something about Jewish power, and he stumbled and stammered, I can't go there. And that was a little bit of an eye-opener to people. Why can't you, you're talking about all of these things, why can't you talk about that? And so I, over the weekend, listened to him, this would have been from a few weeks later, saying, well, okay, I didn't answer the question, this is why I didn't answer it, and this is what I think about it. And his position was, well, Jews are just a lot smarter than everybody, and we should be thankful that we've got, yes, they're overrepresented in the halls of power. It's because they're smart, and we should be thankful we have so many smart, talented Jews who are guiding our society. Now, before I hand it back over to you, the whole thing to me, sometimes there's a question, are Jews white? And, you can go into racial aspects and genetics and this and that. And to me, that's not at all interesting or important. Why you have to talk about them separately from whites, forget the genetics, you have to talk about them separately from white, because what they see as their group interest is diametrically opposed to the group interests of whites. And if... more than anything else, that's what differentiates them. And so, and Jordan Peterson knows, I mean, if he spent time at Harvard, he knows that the Jews who have taken over Harvard are running Harvard very specifically against the interests of whites, both in terms of their admissions policies and in terms of, these academic narratives that they're pushing. So, I'm kicking it over to you. So you have Alex Jones, who is now who's trying to cope with growing awareness of Jewish power in his way. But then you've got somebody like Jordan Peterson, who is really kind of doubling down on subservience to Jews. What do you think about that?
I can't stand Jordan Peterson. And I said from the minute he emerged that he was a bad egg. And I said he was a bad egg for... not just refusing to acknowledge facts about a certain ethnic group, but because he was someone who did something very, very dangerous, he correctly identifies many of the problems, and he speaks very articulately about those problems. However, he always comes to the wrong conclusions when talking about those problems and when discussing them. So it's almost like he's like, these are the problems, this is what's happening, this is what's going on. Oh, we've got transgenderism being pushed on us, we've got mass immigration, he talks a good talk, he talks about feminism, he talks about the coercive and anti-free speech policies in universities, and that gets everyone's attention. But his answer is always selfish individualism, and that white people shouldn't come together as a tribe and act as a cohesive group to defend their own interests. Now, it's very interesting, isn't it, because he's constantly telling his audience, which are overwhelmingly white, they're overwhelmingly people who would be attracted to the kind of things we talk about, he constantly tells them, do not engage in identity politics, do not think as a tribe, do not act as a group, that is the way of the left, that's the way of the bad guys. I would love to see him go to AIPAC and make that speech. I would love to see him lecture, in fact, the Jewish community about not subscribing to identity politics, about not working as a group, about thinking as individuals, and how groupthink and identity politics was evil. But he won't. And he's another one of these people who tries to claim that Jews are only doing these anti-Western things and are only overrepresented in anti-Western activities because they're higher IQ. He, to me, has always seemed like a bad egg, like someone who's being put there as controlled opposition, who is being built up to essentially lead people on a merry dance to their own destruction. And unfortunately, he has built up this huge following who are now, and they come and they debate with me on a regular basis, telling me that I am one of the key problems in Western society because I want white people to come together as a cohesive and homogenous group to defend themselves against other cohesive and homogenous groups which are posing a threat to Western civilization. And when I say to them, why shouldn't we be coming together? They say to me, because collectivists are the problem. Well, if that's not a mental sickness, what is? If believing that coming together with your own people is evil, what hope is there? And it's him that's spreading this poison. He is spreading the poison, and unfortunately, he's spreading it to people that are actually awake to the other problems. People who are waking up to the problems are going to him for advice, and he's giving them the wrong advice. He's saying, here are all the problems, and here's the solution. But the solution is a crooked and completely false solution, which will only lead them to their own demise. Because there's no way can a group of individuals, atomized individuals, face off successfully against a cohesive and homogenous enemy. And that's the problem. Jordan Peterson is a bad egg. And I have said he is controlled opposition. I don't know who's controlling him, but whoever it is, they have played a very smart game with that man. And notably, he has refused to debate with anyone who speaks about standing up for white interests, even Faith Goldie. And Faith Goldie, she's a lovely woman. She's been on my show before. I think she's absolutely great. But he won't even debate with her, let alone. And I'm not saying she's not a heavyweight. She's very intelligent. But heavyweights are people like Dr. David Duke, Mike Enoch. He won't even debate with Faith Goldie, let alone a Mike Enoch, David Duke, or somebody like me or Patrick here. He hides from people like us because he has been told by the people who are pulling his strings, don't you dare engage, even with people like Faith Goldie. Let alone people like Dr. David Duke. That man is a bad egg, and he is leading our people astray. And I just feel sorry for all these people who are waking up and looking for solutions, looking for answers. And the answer is coming together as a group, coming together as a proud and cohesive and homogenous European group. And he has even gone as far as to say that we should throw off our history, that being proud of who we are and taking pride in our ancestry is completely false and destructive and misleading. Now, isn't that just the same as what the left say? The left are intent on taking away our inheritance, our pride in our ancestors has to be thrown away, put in the dustbin of history. And that's just what he's saying.
And I just want to jump in for a second and say, that's the left now is like that. There are elements of the left that would not be like that, that really have nothing to do with that. And there are elements of the right who, I guess like Jordan Peterson, are pretty much on board with it. We're going to be going to break. We'll be back with one more segment with Mark Collette from Great Britain.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 today.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network.
Welcome back to National Bugle Radio, and while I have our British friend Mark Collette on, I want to ask a question about Britain. You think about the island of Great Britain; it's got this English in most of the island, but you got the Scots in the north, you got the Welsh in the west, and for centuries you've had these groups, and they've been living under the same political structure, same economic structure. And they have maintained identities. You do have an independence movement in Scotland, not enough to win a referendum a year or two ago. But you've had these groups, and often harmonious, but not 100%. What do you think? And there's been a certain amount of mixing between them, but they've maintained their identities. What do you think about this long history of the Scots and the English and the Welsh living together on that island compared to what's going on in Britain now, where you've got a lot of immigrant groups coming in, especially Muslim groups, and is resulting in chaos?
Well, the first thing that I've got to say is the English, the Irish, and the Scots and the Welsh are very, very ethnically similar. We're very racially similar. We have similar cultures, similar ways of life. And we haven't always got on. Mm. We've rubbed along quite well, but we have gone to war with one another. There have been troubles. And there are independence movements in both Wales and Scotland. There is a movement, obviously, to reunite Ireland, because there is a northern and southern Ireland. There's also a sizable movement to keep them separate. There is even a movement in England for English independence. So that's when people have a shared language, a shared culture. They're racially similar. So you can see that by introducing more people into the British Isles, and to introduce people who have far greater racial, ethnic, cultural differences, you're only going to create larger divides, larger problems, and you're going to build deeper levels of resentment and greater and more often more violent and more problematic cultural divides. Mm-hmm. And you see that with Islam. You know, if we can't always get on, the English and the Scots, and we have a lot more in common than, say, you know, the English and someone from Saudi Arabia or somebody from Afghanistan or Iraq, how are we ever going to get on? And we don't. You can see that throughout European history, there have been enough problems between different European nations or different European peoples. Now, yes, a lot of that has been driven by greedy capitalists, by people who have sought to fan the flames of war for profit. But the fact is, multiculturalism has never worked, and it will never work. And the fact is, if we don't stop what's going on, there will be no future for any of us. But there's the music. So thank you for another great episode, and I will see you on Wednesday.
Thank you so much. I look forward to Wednesday. And tomorrow I have Tom Kaczynski as my guest. That's something to look forward to. It will be another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Resurrect the Republic.